at the corner of Worth and Center Streets in Lower Manhattan. For those individuals, families, and businesses that have not yet registered but still have a disaster-related unmet need, FEMA has extended the registration period for federal assistance to January 31st, 2003. The center is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. For more information, call 1-800-462-9029. That's 1-800-462-9029.
This has been a list of events from the WBAI Community Bulletin Board.
Let us know what's taking place in your community. Write to us at least 2 weeks in advance at WBAI Radio, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005.
Or fax us at least 2 weeks in advance at 212-747-1698. That's 212-747-1698. I'm Vajra Kilgour.
And I'm Victor Takewall.
Have a great day.
And thank you very much for that. You are tuned to listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM on the World Wide Web at WBAI.org. It's 12 noon, approaching 12:01. Stay tuned for Natural Living with Gary Noble.
Talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. Today, we're going to be exploring the issues that are on the minds of Leslie Kagan, who is the current head of the Pacifica National Board, and Bernard White, who is the program director of WBAI. Last week, after a presentation of my own findings, my own investigation of the crisis that has occurred or has been occurring at Pacifica and the different stations over the period of the last several years, Bernard White called and asked for Leslie Kagan to be able to appear this week on our program. And that is fine. This is a forum that appreciates ideas and concerns of individuals. So we invite Leslie and Bernard to share their opinions and insights or questions, any questions they may have of me. Any issues they would like to share, this is a forum that opens itself up to that. Let's say hello now to Bernard White and Leslie Kagan. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary.
And let's start with you, Leslie. Please share your concerns and your thoughts, your ideas with our audience, or any questions you may have of me.
Sure. First, let me just thank you for sharing your hour with us today. We very much appreciate that, and we think the listeners of WBAI also appreciate this opportunity. I certainly think it's critical that we learn from our own past, our own recent history, in order to look forward. But it's really critical, if we're going to learn the lessons from our own history, to be as accurate as we can about what that history actually was. Let me just say also that the characterization that we are still in a crisis, I disagree with. Of course there are still problems. Of course there are many difficulties that not only here at BAI but throughout the Pacifica network that we face, but we are no longer in the crisis mode that this national network of five stations was for several years. I also should just say that as much as I appreciate this opportunity to review some of that history and share our thinking about what's going on in the network, I really wish that we could begin to talk more about the future and where we want to be going with this network and what the challenges are that we face, especially as Washington gears up for a war against Iraq and other pressing global and local problems. Anyway, having said that, let me just say that I know, Gary, that several times you've announced that you've done a very thorough investigation about the situation here at WBAI and at Pacifica, And let me just say again to you and to those people who are listening, I would love to see that written report. I actually don't know if anybody has seen it yet. I'm not challenging that you've done it. I just would love to see it because in any given program, obviously, we're not going to get to all the issues. I also know that in the course of doing that investigative work, that I know I was never interviewed. I've been on the National Board since June of 2000, and I was never interviewed for that investigation. And I know many other central players, both here at WBAI and around the network, were never interviewed. So if that's an ongoing work, investigative work that you're doing, I would love to talk to you in more detail and give you my thoughts. One of the things you said, Gary, in the show that you did here at BAI, I guess it was a week ago Monday on the 26th of August, was that there really was not a coup here at the station at WBAI. And as you said, Bernard White is here with us. I think he'll talk more about some of the internal dynamics here at the station. But let me just say, as somebody who was on the national board at the time, in December, in the fall of 2000, from where I was sitting, and certain, call it what you will, whether you want to call it a coup or not, I don't really care. There was a dramatic, sudden change of leadership with no formal process followed, firings happening overnight, locks being changed in the middle of the night. I can understand why people would call it a coup. It certainly seemed like a coup. But again, if you don't like that language, that's fine. But I think anybody looking at what actually happened would have to admit that there was no process, no clarity about why changes were being made. They seemed arbitrary. They still seem, looking back on it, arbitrary, and many of them unnecessary. And those changes late in December led to, over the next several months, the firings and bannings of about 28 different people here at the station. Altogether, that represented quite a dramatic shift in what was happening here. The other issue I just want to say beginning way here is that on that same show on the 26th, you mentioned, Gary, you made some reference to the concern that activists, not only here in New York but around the country, had raised around whether or not there was consideration by the old leadership of the National Board to sell any of the stations. And if my memory is correct, on that show on the 26th, you basically said that there was no evidence of any plan to sell any of the stations. And, in fact, you quoted quite extensively from two people who had been on the national board. I actually beg to differ. While it's true that no concrete steps were taken to facilitate a sale, the memo that Michael Palmer, who was then the treasurer of the National Board, had sent to Dr. Mary Frances Berry, the then chair of the National Board, very clearly states that there was interest in looking at the sale of one or more of the stations, and particularly he recommended New York. And I have that memo with me. I can read from it if you'd like. The point is that this, in fact, was an option that was being tossed around and actually is still something that I have a concern about. I know that there are at least two people on the present interim board who still think that might be a reasonable option to sell one of the licenses. So this is certainly not a made-up issue or something that anybody fabricated. It certainly has been a point of view that's been voiced by people on the board. Again, just to close this kind of introductory thing, and then I thought maybe we could turn it over to Bernard for a moment or two, I think that learning from our history requires really that an extra effort be made to really see all the various points of view and come to some determination about what really actually happened at any given moment. And that does require talking to people who were directly involved, as well as people who were able to see the situation maybe from a little more distance. And I hope that's what we're doing here today, is getting some of those other voices out to the listeners.
Bernard, would you like to share your thoughts, please?
Well, yeah, okay, I'll share some of them. You know, we here at the radio station right now are in a period of reconstruction. We've gone through a very tumultuous period in Pacifica's history as well as WBAI's history. And what we've been attempting to do here is pretty much assess our damages, assess those damages, try and figure out various ways of repairing those damages. When we first got back here, there were many producers who felt very much wounded by what had taken place over the previous 13 months. Many of them had been raked through the coals almost on a daily basis. Their personal integrity had been attacked. And when they got back here to WBAI, they wound up speaking out against it. And that was that happened for a couple of weeks, a couple of months, and then it kind of waned. And BAI was moving back into the kind of work that we do best, that is doing the investigative reporting, bringing people from the community to tell their own stories. Even just today, yesterday in the Daily News, a story that we covered and continued to cover when we got back about the Central Park joggers and how these young men had nothing to do with what they were sent to jail for has resurfaced. So we are constantly looking at what's happening outside of our borders, and we had gotten back down to that work. And then we hear this report on Monday that just rekindled all of what had been all of those fires that had been put out. So I'm hoping that what we can accomplish today is to give people a better understanding of what took place, because we still haven't had that discussion, and I didn't want them to be confused by a lot of the misinformation that we heard on the 26th. This is a human service organization. It is a workplace. It is a place where there are a multiplicity of ideas as well as political groupings. We talk about politics all the time. Stands to reason that there would be people here with a variety of different political views. But what is paramount here and what we must always maintain is the mission. We have a mission that is the glue that holds us all together. What happened on December 22nd, when the coup took place, there were some people here who put themselves above the mission. They were motivated by things that had nothing to do with the mission, with personal, motivated by greed in some instances, by petty and professional jealousies, motivated by a belief that they had some kind of right to be in charge. And those are the things that got us internally into the situation that we're in. That combined with a movement on the outside, a movement by Pacifica, who wanted to take advantage of any of divisions that there might be and wind up to achieve their own goals. And those goals were clearly, to me, they seem to be pretty clearly laid out, that there was a move to change the format of the stations, to make it more bland, less cutting edge. You can tell that by the people who they went after. Most of the folks who were eliminated from the airwaves were the people who did some of the most progressive programming on the radio station. So these two things working in tandem came together and began to systematically dismantle WBAI. It had already been accomplished at other radio stations in the network, and BAI was pretty much the straw that broke the camel's back. And what happened was that there were people who listened to BAI on a regular basis began to recognize that the station was going under a change. And these people who listened to the station, not a handful of dissidents, as they're often referred to, but people who listened to the station by the thousands, decided that they were not going to support this. And that's what began to turn it around. When they decided that they were not going to support it, then it began to fall apart. And this feeling reverberated throughout the entire network that they were not going to support an agency or an entity that had abandoned its mission, that came in the middle of the night, that fired people for no reason, never gave a reason, always said that the reason was coming, but it never came. And that's what made the difference. You hear the people who are struggling against this move, this departure from the mission, as being just a handful of dissidents. It was not. There were honest people who stood up and protested against what was quite obvious to them. And I'll stop there.
Okay. Do you have any questions you would like to address to me?
Well, in your white paper, you referred to, I think that one of the things that you did was that you took a lot of quotes from people, but you applied them to in a way that I think was misleading, and it didn't seem like you talked to all of the people that you could have spoken to who were directly involved in trying to save the station. And I walked away from listening to the program with the feeling that you were in favor of what took place. Ooh. And that you were actually in support of a Bessie Wash and a Stephen Yasko, who ran this institution into the ground. I mean, when they left here, there was a $6 million deficit. And I didn't hear you mention that at all. And I was wondering, why didn't you mention that? Certainly, your research would have uncovered that there was a $6 million deficit, and that there were, you know, that the spending of the people who were formerly in charge of Pacifica was way out of the box.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other questions?
I'd like for you to answer that one, and then maybe we'll chat.
Okay, well, let's go through these. I've given you 15 minutes uninterrupted. I would now respond to your questions. Ms. Kagan, do you have any questions for me?
Well, no. Certainly, I echo the questions that Bernard raised. I think that I guess the question that I would have is how, since you said you didn't think there was a coup here at WBAI, what do you think happened?
Okay, good. Those are fair questions. I thank you very much for raising your concerns. I believe that it provides the audience with an opportunity for them to hear what you're thinking. And now I would like to respond. And if you would, please allow me to be responded without interference. And then you can respond to my response, all right?
Yes.
Okay, first, let's go through some of the specifics. You said that there was no reason given, that these things were in the middle of the night. Quote, the personal integrity of people were being attacked. And indeed, you are correct. And indeed, in my report, I stated that I felt that was extremely unfair and should not have been allowed. I do not believe it's ever to anyone's advantage when people are attacked and have no opportunity to respond, especially when it's of a personal nature and people are not dealing with the disagreement in issues or presenting facts, but rather making personal attacks. I might also ask then, why has Robert Knight and others been allowed repeatedly and even on your program to attack me and my character, my reputation, without ever once questioning me, asking me, or confronting me with any of the issues they have, but rather using their program as a form to demonize me without ever giving me the opportunity? Yet I have never once challenged these individuals. I've never spoken with them. Never. I don't even know who this guy is. But he gets on and says, I haven't been at the station ever, never stepped in its doors. And unfortunately, seems though he didn't do his homework. Where was I for 18 years every single day except coming to BAI? Now, if you want to ask why did I stop coming every day and build a studio, then you would have to ask Andrew Phillips about why people were intentionally taking my time from noon to one and running into it, knowing that we were trying to send a syndicated program out and being blocked in doing it by shows starting at 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes after, air checks being taped, programs being sabotaged, signals being distorted. You can hear a program perfectly before my program, perfectly after, but during my program, never. And yet, letter to the letter to the letter to the manager, what happened? Nothing. Racial statements made, disparaging remarks recorded, given, nothing. And yet, not once was I ever spoken with about this. And this isn't a matter of issues about my programming. It's about me. You don't hear that on my program. Yet when it came to protecting the interests of those who had been banned and fired, of all the people who were standing there, who was the one person who invited the people who had been banned and fired on the air? Juan Gonzalez, yourself, Rob Robinson, and other members of the board, I did. Who was the one who held a meeting in my office or over at my studio with inviting anyone you wanted from the board to see if we couldn't create a healing? And who was the one who sat there and said, here are 6 points that I'm offering to Ken Ford and to Andrea Sisco to try to resolve this issue? A, immediate reinstatement of everyone who was fired or banned. B, a 30-day cooling off period. 3, that there be a person appointed who would be a representative between the lab and the national board so there could be a communication between the issues. And those were 3 of 6 points that I offered. You were sitting there. And yet instead of that happening, I heard for 2.5 hours members of the lab and others screaming at Andrea Sisco and Ken Ford in the most vulgar and obscene way, having no interest in reconciliation or stopping this. And yet they said if they could have just a cooling off period, they would do all they could to meet with Bessie Walsh and everyone else and to try to stop this. I'm the one who caused that meeting to happen on your behalf, Bernard White, your behalf. And I'm the one who brought you on the radio program, and no one else did. And yet on my program, you'll have an opportunity to be heard without being cut off. And I can promise you no one will ever be on my show attacking you or Leslie Kagan or anyone else. Now, you asked a specific question. The specific question was that you believe there was a coup. All right, it's more than a perception. First off, for over 6 months, there were serious meetings between Valerie Van Isler and her boss, the executive director, Bessie Walsh. They had a difference in how the station should be run. In the end, it was Bessie Walsh who determined that Valerie was not running the station. Now, I have a question to you, Bernard. Bernard White, did you ever agree in a meeting and approve a memo from Samori Marksman to have Valerie Van Isler replaced as manager? Did you and other people who would later be joining her also want her out of there on 3 separate occasions? It's either yes or it's no. And if it's no, make sure that we hear it spelled N-O. Well, okay? Because you talk about, I'm going to give you this opportunity to make your point. But please let me finish mine. Next, I want you to make a list of all the people who were banned and fired prior to Valerie Van Isler. It was a disagreement over how a station could be run. Now, whether or not Valerie Van Isler was correct or whether or not Bessie Walsh was correct, that is for them to determine or a court to determine. It's not for me or you to determine. But I do know that I could find no evidence of any mass purges or firings. Now, you were program director at the time. And here's a question. You talk about democratic principles and having the best interest of everyone at stake. Well, democratic principles means that if you have 2 different committees who spend months after Samori Marksman's death selecting a program director, and they, in a democratic and completely open and free way, determined that you're not to be program director, but Utrice Lead was, and then Valerie Van Isler says that she's not going to accept their democratic input and make you program director, then how does that look? And the public doesn't know about that. So if we're talking about true democratic principles of getting something done, then why didn't you step aside and say, if the groups didn't want me, if I didn't qualify by their notions, then let Utrice Lee be the program director and I'll continue with my show. Next issue is, if you do not have mass purges and firings, and that's what I look for, and I interviewed the specific people, and by the way, I left messages, at the station, the only address and phone number I had for people to call me back. I interviewed dozens and dozens of individuals. And Leslie Kagan, you said we never spoke. We did speak. And I suggest you go back and refer to a conversation we had. Now, if you don't remember the conversation, I'll repeat verbatim your statement to me and when I called and asked you about the nature of the conflict. I'll be happy to remember, recite and what you said back to me. But I was looking at the time at the people who were representing the voice of the bandit and fired in the dissidents, mainly Juan Gonzalez. He was the chief person out there in an articulate way, writing about what was going on. So when he was stating that there was this massive coup in the middle of the night, quote, in the middle of the night it occurred, then I had to look at what happened in the middle of the night. And I didn't see that there was any massive. What I did see, by listening to the air checks of every single program from December 2nd to December 22nd, was that there was a constant effort to undermine those people in positions of leadership causing dissent, including the advocacy of taking over the station in a demonstration where it would be taking over the airwaves and having a talk in. And there was one problem with that. If that had happened, that could have violated the FCC provision of maintaining control of the airwaves. And that was the basis upon which they changed the lock. Now, I'd been there, you'd been there, you knew there was no working lock on the door. There's a difference between having a lock that works and a lock that doesn't work and having the station taken over. What if it would have reversed? What if today, Leslie and Bernard, what if someone started advocating on shows throughout the day for a month that you all should be fired, that you are trying to take over the Pacifica network and we should storm the station and take over your offices and go on the air and for 24 hours a day we should tell the world what we believe is the truth about you. Would you allow that to be done? Would you step aside and say, fine, go ahead and do that? You know and I know that you could lose your license. And those are just some of the issues that are involved. More importantly, and this is the most important part of this discussion, is I agree with you, Leslie, and I hope that you are truly sincere, because I believe the future is going to be more important than the past, because our past isn't the greatest past. At our best, we had some brilliant programming and terrible programming. And even at the best, we've been on the board. I've interviewed board members clear back through. And remember, you only heard a small part of a larger summary, and it's still unfolding. I was interested, you mentioned that there were 24 people banned and fired, and some said without cause. Well, if you're told that a person should stop saying something because it is, in effect, inciting a riot, and they don't stop, and you terminate the person or you put them on leave, then you have cause. Now, there's arbitration, and there's proper and principled ways that should be handled. And if a person feels they have a grievance, they can take that grievance through those channels. I got to ask you, what grievance process did you give Bob Daughtry when you were part of a committee from the board with one other person and other people, and in this committee you decided on what the station should be doing and other principles, and you took it to your first major board meeting in January, and you gave this committee an opportunity to say what they didn't like, and one of the things they didn't like was Bob Daughtry, the station manager, and you decided to take the recommendation that he should be fired. And I have a question for you. Under what legal authority did you have to fire this man, and he didn't even have a chance to defend himself, and it was done publicly in a room that was like a victory dance for people who had taken back what they considered what was theirs, and that's fine if it belonged to them. But where did Lou Hill write in his minutes, which I have read, in the foundation principles, which I have read, that it should be a far left-leaning political platform and no one else should have the programs? I got to say, where are our programs on comparative religion? Where have our programs on the arts and sciences? Where have our programs been across the network that have not been advocated? And that was a part of the original mission. So if you want to get back to where we should be in the future, then you're going to have to go back to the 1940s. Because anything from the 1970s on does not represent what Lou Hill or the founders of Pacifica meant by this, by a foundation of peace. And I've read here, and I have it here, the Pacifica Foundation Board of Directors position description. And it says what the authority is. And guess what? It says the limits of authority. And it says, quote, the Board of Directors shall not engage in day-to-day operations of the organization. The Board of Directors shall not hire staff or other executive directors. The Board of Directors shall not make programming decisions. If it doesn't make programming decisions, then why am I holding a memo here dated January the 3rd to Bob Daughtry, signed by you, saying that they are going to have to put Pacifica's the Democracy Now! Back on the air, should that have not come through the administrative council of the controller, development director, executive director, and five station managers meeting to approve that by a four or five station decision? They were never given that opportunity. And yet 1 week later, without ever meeting with him, without any of your committee members ever talking with him, you publicly disgraced this man and fired him. So I got to ask you, if you're talking about fairness and wanting reconciliation, where is the fairness and reconciliation in taking a man off the air where everyone, hundreds of pictures of people saying, fire Daughtry, get rid of Daughtry. The whole room erupts and cheers. And yet even on the day of the first meeting, no one knew where the meeting was. All the dissidents knew, but not the other supporters knew. The kind of control that's been going on, I feel, is unfortunate. And I have to ask a simple question. If you want to make the foundation over in your way, and you met with Dean, Mr. Rush in the Pacifica National News, and you told him that they wouldn't be fired, and of course they were fired, and they were given no notice. And it's kind of interesting that here we now have 51 people, since you've all taken power, 51, who have been terminated or fired without cause, without notice. They're just told, you're gone.
Okay,
and some people even find out they're gone from the air. I found out that I was off the air in Washington, D.C. How did I find out? By calling in to do my show and being told that I could not do a live show because of meetings that occurred. And guess who was at those meetings and pressure being brought to bear on the program director? Was I told no? Was my audience told no? Had I said anything on the air in Washington? No.
Okay,
had I not done anything?
Minutes.
So those are some of the issues I also wish you would please address. Thank you very much, and now please address them.
Okay, you've laid out a lot of things, and many of them just are not true.
Be specific and document it, please,
okay,
with documentation.
Gary, I ask of you what you ask of me, okay? First of all, you said that Robert Knight did not say that, you said that Robert Knight said that you never came to the station. Robert Knight never said that.
I never said that. I did not go back and read the transcript. I did not say. I say Robert Knight had been repeatedly attacking me, and it was the other person, Rothenberg, who said I had been at the station.
You're violating your own rules. You said here a few moments ago that Robert, you said that he attacked you. You also said that he said that you never came to the station. And I say that he did not say that. In addition to that, as it relates to Andrew Phillips, that too, we had one of the reasons why we wound up putting on an announcer during the day was that the announcer would wind up making decisions about making sure that the programs got off on time. And that was a problem that all of the programs faced. It wasn't a problem that you were the only one facing. And the announcer here, Michael G. was the one who was hired to do that, now make sure that not only do people get off on time, but pretty much ahead of time. They get off at 55. It was 58, then we moved it back to 55 just to make sure. Andrew Phillips at that particular time, it's ironic you bring him up, because he was an employee of yours, and he might have misled you about, it seems that may be where you got your information from, but he might have misled you about what was going on internally at the station. There was no one targeting you for any reason at all. As far as the meetings that you bringing people on the air, you were going to give a report on a Friday on a Thursday night, I got on Bob Fast's program and talked about how anxious I was to hear that report, especially since you were about to deliver it and you had not spoken to me, Leslie, Valerie, Sharan Harper, or any of the Janice K. Bryant, or any of the people who were immediately adversely affected by some of the moves that were made by the national office, as well as Yatrice Lee. On the question of Valerie, you know, it's interesting because in a couple of months prior to the coup, Valerie was commended in the national board meeting. It's in the record that what a good job she was doing at WBAI. That she was given credit for eradicating the deficit at WBAI because we had a deficit and we eradicated that deficit. And she was being praised for doing that. But you say that there were several meetings over a 6-month period where she was being told by Betsy Walsh that she wasn't doing a good job. That's not true. It's just simply not true.
Are you willing to hold to that it's not true? Are you willing to hold that I didn't interview Valerie Venisser? Remember? Are you saying that is not true and that I didn't meet with Valerie Venisser? I didn't speak with her?
What I said was that you were about to give your report on a Friday. On the Thursday evening, I went to the airwaves and said how anxious I was to hear the report since you had not spoken to any of us. And at that particular time, you had not.
Can you prove I did not speak with Valerie Venisser?
What you did after that was that you held the report off. You called me that Friday, and you asked me would I be willing to be interviewed. And I said, certainly. And that you interviewed me. You taped my interview, and then on Monday, I think we went live. I don't know whether you reviewed the tape or what, but we went live. So that was the sequence of that.
You were taped, if you remember, because I didn't know if they would allow you on live, and then I went down to argue that you should be allowed on live.
Okay, all right. But that was the sequence. Now,
Has Valerie Venisser been fired? Has she been asked to leave?
Gary, you're violating your rules again. You're violating the rules again. The rule was, and we let you go for 15 minutes without 16 minutes without interrupting you. And I asked the same of you.
Okay, but you had 21 minutes. But go ahead.
Okay. About the program director's search committee. First of all, you're wrong again. There were not two committees. There was one committee. There was one search committee, and that it was the belief of the station manager, as well as many who were here in the station, that the integrity of the process had been breached by individuals on the committee. I'll say that, and that the role of the committee is that they make recommendations to the station manager. It is an advisory committee. What the station manager did was she went to the committee and said that she felt that the process had been breached and that she wanted to open up the search again. So there was some turmoil with some of the people, some of the folks who were dissidents, who wound up being a part of who benefited most from the coup that took place, who said that no, they gave her an ultimatum and said that you had to name somebody by noon. And she talked to several people. She also talked to me. And I decided that I would, after saying to them that I didn't know how this would work. I would like to see at some point where there would be the process would be opened up, because as long as it stands as it is now, there'll always be a shadow over it. But however, given what I knew of what was going on, given what I knew of the absence of knowledge about radio, of the people who were about to take over, that I agreed to take it. But the thing about two committees and all of that, you know, that's just not true. Maybe Leslie can.
Yeah, let me take a few moments also, Gary, to respond to some of what you said. First of all, I want to be very clear that I believe quite strongly, and I think I'm speaking for the whole Interim National Board, that nobody on our airwaves here at BAI or any of the Pacifica stations should be attacking other people. It's one thing to have a principled discussion with different points of view, and to attack ideas is one thing. To be strong in our criticism of each other is also certainly feasible, but personal attacks are not acceptable, and we have been communicating that message to Robert Knight and to other people. I also think it's unacceptable for people who have shows on our airwaves to go onto other stations and use that as an opportunity to attack our stations. I think that is not that's not acceptable. We should not be functioning that way. On a few other things, Bernard mentioned some of them. One, Gary, you said you asked if there was a list of fired and banned before Valerie Van Isler had been fired. That was never our claim. Nobody ever suggested that. What we said was that Valerie was the first, followed very quickly then by Bernard and Sharan Louise Harper, followed then over the next several months by a string of, I think it ended up being 28 people. Not all at once, not all in the same weekend, but certainly within a very short time span that did change significantly the sound of WBAI. You asked me, Gary, very directly, what would I do if somebody or a group of people came on our airwaves and advocated firing people and storming the station, taking it over, and in essence could put the license at risk. What I would do immediately is call up those people and invite them in to sit down and talk and to get an airing of what their concerns are and what their issues are, not push them away, not say no to invitations to meet, as happened before when Eutrice Lead was here, and quite a number of people tried to meet with her. Some did successfully meet with her after many attempts, and others never had an opportunity to meet with her. So I think that yes, you're absolutely right, that those people in management at the station and on the national leadership level do have a responsibility to protect the station, protect the airwaves, and to defend the license. But I think there are many, many ways to deal with people short of locking people out of a station, and that's what I would hope Pacifica is all about. You also raised a series of concerns about Bob Daughtry, who had been placed here as the interim manager after Eutrice stepped down. He was here for a few months. I don't remember the exact dates and what happened with him. He actually was, we offered him and the possibility of going back to the job he had come from, which was the chief engineer, the operations person at WPFW, one of the Pacifica stations in Washington, and he rejected that. We tried to work something out with him. We felt he had been placed in this position as the interim general manager here at BAI inappropriately, in a way that really aggravated the situation here, as opposed to cooling things out and opening up space for dialogue and discussion. We thought the appropriate thing would be to offer him his old job back. And he turned that down and really left us with no option. I think that it was unfortunate in a way that some of the personnel issues related to his tenure here at BAI were handled in that public meeting in January in New York. But that did happen. It's unfortunate. Had we been able to handle that differently, I think it would have been better. But yes, you're absolutely right. It happened. By the way, on that issue of the meeting, which you say nobody knew where that meeting was, we were for a week or so before that meeting looking for places that would be big enough to hold what each day went by, it became clearer that more and more people were interested in coming to the meeting, which has to be an open meeting. And so we were scrambling, looking for a good location, a central location that was big enough. In fact, during the 4 or 5 days leading up to the meeting, at least a half a dozen times, either by fax or phone message, I tried to reach Bob Daughtry personally to ask him to please let me or somebody announce on the air where the meeting would be. And he wouldn't let me. So that was part of the difficulty in communicating people, was that the station manager, the interim manager, would not have let the chair of the Incheon National Board get on the air and make an announcement about where this meeting would be. And we went, you know, I tried, as I said, at least six times by fax and email and phone messages. You raised the issue of the Pacifica National News, that people there were fired without notice. That is simply not true. What happened was, as we Bernard mentioned, one of the first things that the National Board did back in January was that we were able to, through a very generous grant to the foundation, hire an independent accounting company to come in and do not a full audit, but an initial look at the books. And one of the things that we uncovered, in addition to the close to $5 million debt that we inherited, was the fact that the Pacifica National News was costing the organization, I think if my memory is right, it was $1.5 million a year to produce. They had a large staff, and it was, you know, quite costly. We sat down with them, and we sat down with the union, with APTRA, who represents them, and a negotiated settlement was reached whereby they, through, again, I don't have all the details in front of me now, but a series of severance packages were hammered out, and an agreement was reached. They were not fired without notice. It was a process that went on, at least 6 weeks of negotiations with APTRA and with the PNN staff to make that transition. You also said that since the new leadership has come into power here, that something like 51 people have been terminated without cause. I did see a letter that came from somebody who works with you. I think there was 41 names on that, with several duplications of names. And that included the 13 or 15, whatever it was, people from the PNN staff. So I don't understand why they would be on there. It included some people here at WBAI who, in fact, because of the financial crisis, an offer was made to everybody on staff here at WBAI for a severance package. An offer was made through the negotiation with the union representation, and I believe it was 8 people here on staff who took that. 3 people did not take it who ended up being fired. Those are the only people that I know of here in New York who were fired, and I don't believe there have been firings or purgings throughout the system, except let me just say one thing. It is true that there have been changes in the general managers throughout the system.
Okay, you've all gone on here for, I would like to respond to some of the points, and we'll have an opportunity to respond in return.
Okay.
I have just received a message from Bob Daughtry, and he's willing to speak with you after the program. He says, quote, Leslie Kagan offered me nothing. What she is saying is not correct. And if she wishes to discuss this with me, she can speak to me, and then you can answer him. I also spoke with the head of Pacifica Network News, and who they all to a person said, quote, we were told by the Pacific campaign, which certainly was representing your interest, that if Leslie won, quote, they would be gone. But Leslie and Dan Coughlin said that they wanted to heal the organization and no one would be fired, but they got rid of us anyhow, no matter what. So there's two different perspectives on this, and the public should know that there is a perspective. Now, to a couple of other issues that I think are important. When it came to you saying that there was no effort to sell the station, or that I said that there was no effort to sell the station based upon my investigation, I made it very clear that two people, Frank Millspaugh, former board member and manager of WBAI, and also the gentleman out of Texas, both said that they had been discussions of swapping signals. I even gave the context. So here we're talking about context. And if you have any documentation, since you were on the board, that there was any effort by the board to take any of these efforts to sell seriously, I would like to see that documentation. The memo had been sent. It was disproved. Nobody was going to go ahead and try selling the board and selling the stations from the board. And that was the point. Not that he hadn't written a memo. He had. I read the memo. But there's a context to the memo. And it was not to sell a station, to close down a station and end it because of its politics or something else, or because someone wanted to be making a lot of money. But I'm reading all these emails, And once the email started, everyone built upon him without ever questioning their veracity or authenticity. That there was an effort to sell by corporatizing the whole board, and to corporatize the board, they had to get rid of the dissidents on the board so they could have it only their way, and to bring in a corporate model. Not only was it called a corporate model, but according to Juan Gonzalez, it was more than a corporate model. It was a dictatorship. And if you want the specific quotes, I have the specific quotes from Gonzalez right in front of me, where he talks about the dictatorship mindset that was setting in and why he was opposed to it. Now, he has a right to say that. He's a journalist. He works for the New York Daily News. Gee, is that a socialist publication? And is from owner Rupert Murdoch? That's not the issue. The issue is he didn't check his facts. The facts were, A, there was no concerted effort by anyone on that board to bring it up to the board to have the board sell a license. If you have proof otherwise, provide the actual proof. Otherwise, the previous memos by the people who had made suggestions were discarded, and there were dozens of ideas that were just, many of us would consider stupid ideas that were discarded. But then that meant that you had to have it go further, and further was that there was this coup. Well, if there was a disagreement between Valerie Van Isler, and if I'd been told, as I was today, that, quote, there was nothing that Valerie was, there were no issues concerning Valerie. She'd been praised by the board. And then I call Valerie and I ask her specifically what the issues were. And she says, quote, I cannot answer that because of advice of counsel. I have to respect that. Even if I know by whatever method I'm able to as a journalist to find out the truth, I have a responsibility not to break that confidence. A, it would be a denigration to my ethic, and B, it would not be honest, or it would not be a conscionable thing to do to Valerie Van Isler. So I left it at that, that there's a disagreement. All right? But if Valerie wants to come on the air, and if she wants to publicly say, Gary, there was no disagreement, then it opens a door for me. If she doesn't do it, I don't feel I have the ethic to open that door against her interest. So be very careful what you say didn't happen, because I can promise you I will bring you documentation. And the difference is documentation. So when you say about purges, yes, there were purges and there were firings, and I'm opposed to that. I was opposed to it then. And who was the first person that I called when I was out of town when this happened? Valerie Van Isler. And ask Valerie. I said, Valerie, what can I do to help you? So you start off with an idea that somehow I want to side with people. I've sided with no one. I knew no one. I was friends with no one. I'm the person that is in a thankless position of trying to find the truth, realizing that the last thing anybody really wants on either side is the truth, because the truth may not support their position. In fact, the truth and facts are less important than what side you belong to. So choose a side. And then once you choose the side, you have to make up whatever you want. Take half truths, partial truths, a whole truth. But that's all you can live with. And now it's them against us. But what about the vast majority of people who are not interested in this kind of warfare, who want to see some kind of resolution? My problem, Leslie, is not now with what's happened. That can't be undone. My problem is the direction that the foundation is going, with the idea that it suddenly has a mandate to go by its own rules. Now, I have the articles right here. I have the Contract for Democracy Now. I also have the Corporation for Public Broadcasting guidelines. I have the FCC guidelines. And I'm looking here, and I got to ask, how in the world with 500 producers, paid and unpaid, can suddenly it be that a contract is given to one person that represents the vast majority of our national budget on programming? And things in this I've never heard of, like doing research, giving her Arbitron ratings. Specifically, will, quote, provide the producer with Arbitron ratings, audiograph market, but also providing her with the opportunity to raise funds for her own private company on Pacifica stations. I'm not given that right. No one else is given that right. Now, I don't have a problem with Amy Goodman or her show. I've never attacked her show for what she does, because what she does as a producer is her responsibility. I'm sure she does brilliant programming, and she's served the interests of the community that supports her efforts. But Then again, she's one of 522 other producers. Then why not say you can all raise funds to help defray the cost of your running your shows? She does a one-hour show. Well, I do a one-hour show. And a lot of other people do a one-hour show. Why shouldn't we all be treated with some equality? And then this really bothers me when she's suddenly given all of the list of the people from the station. Quote, producer, meaning Amy Goodman and her Democracy Now!, which she now owns, shall have the right to engage in fundraising on its own behalf to help meet its production expenses. For this purpose, it is also permitted that all donor lists twice each year, including detailed contact information, names, addresses, telephone numbers, and email addresses, are available. I'm not given that. I'm told I can't have that. Well, if someone has all the information on who subscribes to a station, then they can exploit that if they chose to. She's given an opportunity by contract to exploit that for her raising funds. Why aren't all of us given that opportunity? And then even on her, if there's an arbitration, let's say that something goes wrong, then who is her arbitrator?
Yeah, I just want to ask if we're going to continue.
Michael Ratner, yes. Michael Ratner then is given the opportunity as the only arbitrator in a binding arbitration. Well, who's Michael Ratner? He's the one who's going to decide if there's ever a problem, who's right. He's her lawyer. I got a question for all the lawyers in the audience. How does Michael Ratner, as her lawyer, end up as the arbitrator in a binding arbitration if there's a problem? How likely is it he's going to say, okay, even though I'm representing her and I'm the arbitrator, I'm not going to find necessarily in her favor. There is at the very least, there is a sense of imbalance here, and I'm suggesting, with no issue towards Amy or her program, but rather for the fairness of all the other programs, if we're going forward as an orchestra, if we're going forward as a foundation wanting to do the best broadcasting, shouldn't we go back to what Lou Hill, from his own words, and all the founders said, we must not have propagandizing, we must not have one-sidedness, we must not have messianic complexes, we must have an enormous spectrum of things, and I'm not hearing that now on the air, and a lot of other people aren't either. I'm hearing one side, a leftist side, and even from the emails I'm seeing, which is unfortunate, I know you don't encourage this, and I'm not blaming you for this, this is just a general statement, that when even those dissidents who have taken power see anyone disagree with them, now they're attacking each other. So where is the peace and harmony going to come when you've won? Hey, your people won. All right? The dissidents won because of the tactics they used. Were they ethical? In my opinion, no. Were they legitimate ways of disagreeing? No. You talk about honest people coming on the air and discussing issues. I agree with that. I respect that statement from you. Thank you for saying that. But how does that reconcile when people get a death threat? How does that reconcile when people are taken off the air and they're not told? They find out when they suddenly turn in their program, they're no longer on there, like WPFW in Washington. How does it reconcile when people go out and their car has been smashed and their window smashed? How does that reconcile when someone's tapped into your email and put a virus on your computer and taken a list of all your potential employers? How does that reconcile when people pick it outside of your church with slogans that demonize you? Is that the way we should represent ourselves as, quote, Pacifica, which means peace?
We're at 1258, and for those of you who are listening, you're listening to WBAI in New York. My name is Bernard White, here with Leslie Kagan, talking to Gary Noe. Armand DeMille has agreed to allow this to go over into the next hour. So, Gary, if you have the time, certainly we'd like for you to be with us. Valerie Van Isler has also joined us, and she will be making a statement, I guess, or answering some of the questions that were raised. So hopefully you will stick around for the next hour or so.
Well, I can't stick around for the next hour or so, but I will stick around as long as I can, because I have a television appearance I'm doing to raise funds, but I will stick around as long as I can.
Okay.
Great. Can I respond to some of what you said?
Please.
A few things that I don't know that I got notes on everything here. One is on, just very quickly, let me just say that, yes, of course I would talk to Bob Daughtry, and you should feel free to give me his number or give him my number, whichever. On the question of an effort to sell stations or to sell any license, no, I don't think anybody ever claimed that there were actually literally steps taken to sell a station. What we claimed, what we said, based on what we heard from people and what we saw in written documents, was that there was an interest in pursuing that as an option, which is obviously very different than actually beginning to take steps to make a sale. And let me just read for half a second from a memo that Michael Palmer wrote to Dr. Mary Frances Berry, who was then the chair of the National Pacifica Board. Michael Palmer was then the treasurer of the board. And he says, "Mary, I think any such transfer we would ever consider requires significant